talking to my people, yeah. Talking to the ghetto, get down. You're out there floating on your own, hoping the streets will somehow occupy your mind. The hurt when you're alone. Seems as though reality dropped another life at your feet. Now that you face another day, it leaves you feeling like you'd like to take it home. Your eyes see things and say, no way. Feels like there's an enemy in everyone who loves you. Ghetto people, ghetto people, what are you gonna do? Tell me, do you really think that? Do you really think that the government cares about you? No, they don't. Ghetto people, ghetto people, who you gonna turn to? Who you gonna turn? Stop it, ghetto people. Show some love for yourself, people. Life can take some strange turns on you. Living with the things thrown at you leaves you in the cold with a day that's not worth having. Chances are the shortfalls of greed won't ever come to feel what you need. What you really want inside can only come from you. The day will come when all of your pride leaves you standing around looking like, what am I gonna do? You have those feelings deep inside, a strange kind of sadness can never get used to. Ghetto people, what are you trying to prove? Come on, tell me, y'all. Do you really think that the world gives a damn about you? Hell no, it don't. Ghetto people, who you gonna turn to? Who you gonna turn to? Listen, people, you better take a look at yourself, yeah. Talking to my people, eyes, but you just don't see what you're living like at. You're living, living like you're living, caught up in the make-believe, lost in ghetto your dream, people. Yeah. Ghetto people, stop giving up your self-respect. Stop it, ghetto people. Talking to my people, yeah. Can take some strange turns on you. Living with the things thrown at you leaves you in the cold with a day that's not worth having. Chances on the shortfalls of greed won't ever come to feel what you need when what you really want inside can only come from you. With your life, running like a rare disease, running like a rare disease.
Motherland Media is on the air. You are listening to African Perspectives on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. African Perspectives, where we talk about the issues of our day from an African worldview, an African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak. Having been granted permission, to our ancestors whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters and friends, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. So I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep.
You're listening to African.
It is always an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who is living, and everyone who will live in the future. We have a common ancestral root. We sashay. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were other cultures as well, such as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to classical civilizations of Africa. We sashay. We pour this libation to contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, great civilizations that were flourishing while Europe was still in the medieval or dark age. So we pour this libation to those contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, uprooted out of Africa, laying a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. They are now in North America, Central America, South America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to brothers and sisters who suffered the Holocaust of enslavement, of captivity. We do not know their names, but because of them, we are here. So we honor them and their sacrifice. We say Ashe. We pour libation to those men and women who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you'll know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a slave want to do? It wants to get free. There's over 400 recorded revolts of our people fighting on the continent, throughout the Middle Passage, and this hemisphere. We resisted. We were not slaves. A slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master, and we haven't and we will never submit. So we give honor and reverence to those men and women who fought. Denmark Vesey, Gabriel Prosser, Harriet Tubman, Nat Turner, and many, many others. We honor them. We respect them for always standing and fighting for the liberation of our people. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We say ashe. We pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good community life because we don't have good family life. Conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is bad because we lack consciousness. Consciousness is more than just awareness. It's a deeper understanding of who you are culturally, historically, and the necessity to come together to produce family, which is produces good community life. So we pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We say ashe. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well with you today. I hope that you get a chance to do today all the things you need to do, have to do, must do, should do, better do. And I hope the weather is accommodating for you to do it. But if it is not, you got to do it anyway. So, baby, go ahead. Let's get it done. Don't procrastinate. Let's get it done. I'll say this. The weather is truly not accommodating. not here in the deep South. Alabama, through Georgia, all the way up into Tennessee, the Carolinas, all the way up the coast, all up the eastern coast. Cold, snow. Yeah, it snowed. Well, of course, now when they get snow like what we had overnight, and then waking up in the morning, that's why they close the schools and other businesses and so forth, because, you know, it's tough out here. And the fact that there was some precipitation late last night and the temperature was what it was, and then the snow came, and it's very light snow, so you understand that it's real cold. It's not a lot of moisture in the snow. And, of course, the ground froze. And putting a layer of fluffy snow on it, which doesn't help give you traction. And so it's really bad. It's bad driving out there. It's just extremely cold. It's only like 16 degrees. And it's only going to get up to, what is it going to get up to? I think it's not even going to get up to 30. That's how bad it is here, you know. And hey. It's all a part of the global warming or climate change. Yeah, that's it, climate change. Yeah, climate change is real. Yep. I think it's not even going to get to 30. So, and as I've stated on this program numerous times, that it's part of what we need to expect in terms of hurricanes, tornadoes, earthquakes, extreme weather patterns that are unfortunate in various parts of the world, causing all kind of calamity. But it is what we have to deal with, and that's what it is. So, and what you would hope would happen is that governments of the world and people of the world would recognize that and would begin to do the things necessary to change that, to reverse that situation. Unfortunately, they still haven't. They're still trying to make deals for fracking and oil and all this other kind of stuff when they should be developing clean energy and alternative energy sources. So I tell you, brothers and sisters, it doesn't look good for humanity when the people who are in power and control, Europeans particularly, always have a different design and who, of course, have no interest at all in justice, no interest at all in equality, no interest at all in truly helping and serve humanity. Truly don't. One man who made that cry, well, let me, before I get off on Dr. King again, I'm going to do some more stuff on Dr. King. Give us our promo for the activities that are happening here on Time for Awakening Media. Excuse me. And, of course, the number, the call-in number here, 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. This program, African Perspectives, airs every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time. All times that I'm going to give are Eastern Times. On Mondays and Monday evenings after my program, 8 o'clock, it's Let's Buy Black 365. Let's Buy Black 365. On Wednesdays, it's Revive. That's this evening with Sister POC, and that's 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. on Wednesdays. Tomorrow, Thursdays, it's Us Lifting Us, ULU, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People in the Spirit of Ujamaa. Cooperative economics are like, we like to say, family-centered economics, pulling our resources, beginning to trust one another, support one another, work with one another, build with one another. And our Cafe ULU will be opening soon. It's a pleasure to be there. It's a pleasure to work with the brothers and sisters who are lending a hand to make it happen. It's truly a communal effort. So check them out tomorrow night. You can learn more about it. And you can learn how you can become involved with Us Lifting Us from 9 p.m. to 11. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern Time, it's time for an awakening. That's right, brothers and sisters. It's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Outstanding guests and dialogue and open forums. Time for an awakening. Saturdays, SST. Saturday Sports Talk with Brother Troy Wilmore from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. Saturday early afternoon, it's Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 4 to 6 p.m. On Sunday, Revive with Sister POC from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And if it's Sunday and it's 7 p.m., it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Also to Brother Paul from the U.K., programs upcoming, to have a program coming out of the UK. That's going to be exciting. And there's other stuff that here on Time for an Awakening Media is going to be presenting to our people. As you can see, this whole lineup is geared towards raising the awareness and the consciousness of African people and to do for themselves. The lineup of programming that we have clearly demonstrates the need for our people to come together, to close ranks, to pool resources, and do for themselves. You don't hear people in this program whining and crying and begging, Caucasians, please hire me. Please promote me. Please let me live in your neighborhood. Please let me go to the schools you go to. The programming on this network, on this medium, clearly talks about what we as African people from America and throughout the diaspora and on the continent must do for themselves. Speaking of brothers and sisters on the continent, we have Brother Bomani Tahimbe. Brother, he was on my program a few weeks ago. In fact, he had another brother on Time for an Awakening talking about repatriation, taking brothers and sisters back to, particularly to Ghana. to either repatriate or do some investing or just to visit and so forth. And that's what Brother Bomani has done. And you can check out Brother Bomani some photos on Facebook, facebook.com/Bomani, B-O-M-A-N-I. Or you can check out the videos that he has posted on YouTube, youtube.com/Bomani 2007. Bomani 2007. His organization, if you want to go on the web to check it out, is AfricaForTheAfricans.org. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Think of sending an email at AfricansForTheAfricans, AFTA 2010 at MSN.com. So check out Brother Bomani, and he has a tour planned in May. He has a tour planned in May of this year. So check him out. Find out how much the cost will be, if it's affordable. Or if you can't, you can start saving. But you, my brother or sister, can go to Ghana and see for yourself what the brothers and sisters have to offer. Another announcement is on Fridays, Brother Joseph Muhammad, he was with me this past Friday. And he has a program on Blog Talk Radio, and that is Disaster Awareness for Community Preparedness. That is every Friday from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And the number to call to listen or to participate in the conversation is 563-999-3089. 563-999-3089. That's my good friend, Brother Joseph Muhammad, with Disaster Awareness for Community Preparedness. And they just talk about a myriad of things like we do. The whole thing is designed to get our people conscious about what's going on around them so they can make the plans to change things that are happening. Also, to become aware of what disasters are and how you can help yourself and help your family protect yourself. I mean, you look at the weather the way it is. I mean, man. You looked at what happened in the Southwest. Fires all up and down the West Coast. And then later the fires in the Los Angeles area. And then followed by torrential rain where there was no vegetation to suck up the water. It was just mud. And you've seen mudslides with boulders coming down, crashing into people's homes. Think about 30-some people have perished in that situation. So each area of the country has its dynamics. And some places in the country that are unusual, like the snow and the freezing temperatures in this part of the country. That happens, and it has happened, and it will definitely now, because of the climate change, will continue to happen. But previously, it didn't happen. And when it did, it was an extreme rarity. Now it's going to be an occurrence, a continuous occurrence. So, as an African person, I call upon the spirit and the wisdom of our ancestors and cosmic forces of truth and justice to be with us, to strengthen us, our sense of responsibility, and help us to recapture our minds, to restore the knowledge and the love of self, to learn, to study, to create, to build, to plan, and to work together for our survival as individuals and as a community. Dr. Frances Cruz. Well, no, it's Fannie S. Clark. Fannie S. Clark. It's a great quote, isn't it? I mentioned the other day my favorite quote of Dr. King. Dr. King said, "Nothing in the world is more dangerous than sincere ignorance and conscientious stupidity." Love that quote. Favorite quote from Dr. King, because it typifies our condition, our situation. I used to do this one piece called Brother on the Street. It's Brother on the Street, and there's a reporter asking questions about what adversely affects our community. So the reporter asked Brother on the Street, excuse me, Brother on the Street, yes, yeah, what's up? Can you tell me what affects or adversely affects our community more? Is it ignorance or is it apathy? Brother on the Street contemplates the question for a moment, scratches his head and his ass, and he says, you know what? I don't know and I don't care. Ignorance, I don't know. Apathy, I don't care. And that is where we are, brothers and sisters. There are many of us who don't know and truly don't care. Because we have bought into the idea of what America is and what America's about. Individualism. I got mine. Get yours. And if you didn't get yours, it's your fault. Because it's there to be got. And I'm getting mine. And even if I got to take yours to get mine, I'm going to do it. Individualism. Materialism. The latest car, clothes, house, this, that, or the other. Just materialism. Greed. More, more. Got to have more. And if I got to undermine somebody to get more, so be it. Greed. There was a game show called Greed some years ago, about 10, 15 years ago, more maybe, I don't know. The whole objective is to build the pot, and you could be teammates with a person. Both of you are building the pot, and at one moment, one of your teammate or yourself can feel the greed to just take it and knock them out the box. Greed, violence. This country has been violent since its very inception. Europeans mark achievements by violence, by conquest. They don't mark achievements by enlightenment, good institutions that care and do things for human beings. They mark achievements by war. They are a very warlike. In fact, I often said one thing the European has always done, found a better way to kill, a better way to destroy, to maim. Look at their history. Of all our studies, history is best qualified to reward our research. Look at the history of Europeans. Constantly finding better ways to torture, the Inquisition. Look at the things they came up with, the Inquisition. Look at the enslavement of African people. Look what they did, the mask, the chains around our neck and so forth. The whippings, the beatings. Better guns, more powerful weapons, bigger bombs. All of these things, Europeans, to establish and maintain the privilege and the advantage that they have created, European, Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege. There's nothing in this world more dangerous than sincere ignorance and conscientious stupidity. To be sincere, to being ignorant, not wanting to know. It's like that saying, if we knew better, we'd do better. No. I understand that saying. I love the quote, if we knew better, we'd do better, because I often said about us, man, look at our condition. Look how we act towards each other. If we knew better, we would do better. But a lot of times, brothers and sisters, we don't want to know, because by knowing, it will cause you to do better. You cannot continue to behave and think and do the way you have been once you know better. To be sincere, to being ignorant. Conscientious, that means that you're aware that you're stupid. And you don't want to know any better. You just want to go along to get along. You don't want to challenge the status quo. You don't want to challenge this system. And really, let me say this. I don't want to challenge this system. I want to depart. There is no challenging this system. This system was created by Europeans for their privilege. Created by them. But Dr. King challenged the three evils of racism, excessive materialism, and the militarism. That's what Dr. King did. He challenged the system. He understood, saying, hey, in order for us to make what these Caucasians put on paper, we have to challenge them. And because he was getting deeper into that challenge, not just saying, I want to go to the same school you go to. I want to live in the same neighborhood you live in. I want to have the same job that you have. All things that were adverse to Caucasians, no doubt. But I challenge you. I challenge the military, the Vietnam War involvement. I challenge the economy, the capitalism, the unfettered bridal capital. See, when he was integrating lunch counters, that ain't no problem. But once he talked about the Vietnam War and the economy, just like he said, it didn't cost him anything for us to get a chance to vote. It didn't cost him any other little peripheral things that the Caucasian will go ahead and give us. But once he talked about the economy and redistribution of wealth, he had to go. That was a nice piece. You can check that out on YouTube, the great griot that I played the other day on Dr. King. And the fact that this government, on Monday, had all of these celebrations, but it was this government that killed him, that assassinated him. The government of the United States. Snakes, and wanted you to believe that James Earl Jones acted alone. But the government was put on trial and found guilty. But yet we still, to this day. And then, of course, what happens on the third Monday of each January, we have all of these programs across this country, all this perceptions of integration, corporate luncheons, all of this. And they talk about all of the glowing things that Dr. King said up until that point of his radicalism. When he was trying his best to help this government understand that we should be able to drink from the same water fountain and go to the same toilet and sit in the theater on any seat as opposed to just only in the balcony, integrating and ending desegregation, that's one thing. But when he talked about the other stuff, no, can't have that. Was Dr. King's radical legacy replaced with a sanitized version for the sake of Caucasian comfort? Brother Camus Franklin, one of the writers.
This call is being recorded.
One of the writers for Atlanta Black Star. It's going to take this from Atlanta, but we got a caller. Let's take the caller right quick. Caller 646.
Yeah, Hotep, Brother Oshie. Listen, man. You cannot blame a Negro peen, white Neanderthal loving Negro like James Earl Jones for killing Martin Luther King. It was James Earl Ray, brother. You got to give credit where credit is due. Don't put that on that Negro. please.
Oh, did I say James Earl Jones?
Oh, yeah, well. You said James Earl Jones.
Thank you. Thank you, for the correction.
It was a Freudian slip based on the fact that it's his birthday today. And, he's a master Negro peace, white woman lover. And, it just came to your mind. You know, it's that African spirit, trying to point out another enemy of our people at work.
Yeah.
But, right quick, it's in a sense sad that, we're coming up on the anniversary of 50 years of the death of Martin Luther King. But the sad part to me is that we're still talking about him in the sense that he's the guiding force of what so-called direction and leadership of African people should be. And, brother, I'm sorry to say it, and I know people get mad at me when I say it, it's time to put him to rest, man. We need new leadership. We need a new vision. We need to be at a point in our development to where as we're looking at things differently. I mean, if you really put the man into context and we are honest about it, if his last 2 years were not recorded and not spoken about, in all truthfulness, Martin Luther King would be a damn nightmare for black folks, because he did, like he said, lead us into a burning house that unfortunately our people have gone into lock, stock, and barrel. And in the process, it's really, really hurt our development, honestly, as a people. Because if you really look at it today, we are at a sense at the lowest ebb in this country. Every other group has basically surpassed us in productivity and position in this country. And that's absolutely sad. And I really truly believe one of the reasons that is because we clear what the Yorugu feels and what the Yorugu thinks of us. But the one thing that the majority of the group feels in these other ethnic groups is a loyalty to their homeland and the cultural identity of who and what they are as a people. And that's something that we need to get into. Identifying with Africa, feeling a love for Africa, a loyalty for Africa, and a point of direction back towards Africa. Because a majority of these ethnic groups at some point in time will go back home or will do service back home to continue the development and the growth of their countries. That's why you see a lot of these countries, even though they struggle, there's always members here in this country trying to send back something to be able to keep the country afloat. And that's one of the reasons that the Yorugu is now trying to figure out ways to tax the remittance of funds to a person's homeland.
Right.
I don't know if they just talked about that in New York, now wanting to charge people a fee for sending back money to their homeland.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I hear you. So, that's what we got to do.
That's just something that we have to start looking at, and we have to start focusing. And, I feel the same way about Malcolm X, too. I feel a different in a sense about Garvey, because Garvey had a plan, I feel, that we should have, you know, done.
Yeah,
I mean,
no
it's
doubt.
A plan
no doubt.
That other, it's a plan that other groups use to do their thing that no one really likes to talk about. So, I mean, Martin Luther King was a great man. He served a purpose at that time that was manipulated with others. You know what I mean? And, you know, the Yoruba always give you someone to be a spokesperson, and then they take them away from you
right.
when they slightly go off script. But we, at this point in time, had to develop new ideas, new visions, and new practices if we're going to move forward. Because if we keep on going forward with this premise of the idea of Martin Luther King, in all honesty, we ain't going no damn place. If we keep on thinking that the Democratic Party and politics is going to save us, we're not going no damn place. Because the truthful matter of things is, in order for politics to serve a people, you must have a community in order for them to release the services needed to deal with that situation. You know, your vote, in all honesty, as an individual, doesn't really mean nothing. It is the collective of one's vote that means something in order for the person that you put in office to be able to serve you. But if you don't have a community in place to receive, you know, the services, then you're not really getting anything in return, if the truth be told, because there's but so much one politician will do for an individual. It's about the collective.
That's right.
And the sad thing is that our people don't understand that. So we'll make it seem as though we've done something by putting some Yoruba in office or some Negro peen in office. And in the process, there's not really anything they could do. But, you know, just be a spokesperson or a figurehead or, you know, someone that you could look at. And that was what the deal was with Barack Obama.
Right.
That Negro never did nothing for our people. But look, I got to run.
All right.
But I just wanted to let you know, get your Negro peens right, please, brother, because it's you know, it's a funny thing, man, because, you know, James L. Ray was the scapegoat for King for the United States government
exactly.
of Birmingham. Hotep, brother.
Hotep, dear brother. Thanks a lot, Jay. Continue to listen. Continue to contribute. Appreciate you so much. This is from Atlanta Black Star. It was last year, same date, last year, by Camu Franklin. So, but it's relevant as always today. Was Dr. King's radical legacy replaced with sanitized version for the sake of Caucasian comfort? January 15 would have been Dr. King's, or let me read it in present tense. January 15th has been the 89th birthday of Dr. King. 2018 marks the 50th year since his assassination in Memphis, Tennessee, as he supported a striking American African sanitation workers who were attempting to win fair play and better working conditions. In the time after his death, King has slowly morphed into an unassailable American icon. At the time of his death, however, King was just as hated in Washington elite political circles as he was by the Southern segregationists. Washington lawmakers always thought King pushed too fast in attempting to end segregation and practices and his public stance against the U.S. involvement in Vietnam and Southeast Asia that left more than 5.5 million Vietnamese, Cambodians, Laotians dead. 5.5 million. Was seen as a betrayal by Lyndon Johnson. By 1968, King's anti-war stance and his shift to economic inequality led him to being publicly berated by the NAACP, by them Negroes, which suggested that he stick to civil rights and vilified by the Johnson administration. Until his death, The federal government monitored Dr. King's activity through J. Edgar Hoover's run FBI COINTELPRO. The FBI attempted to discredit Dr. King and even sent him a letter encouraging him to commit suicide before his acceptance of the Nobel Prize, which he was the youngest person to get the Nobel Prize at that time. I don't know why Barack Obama got a Nobel Peace Prize. Remember that? He just became president. He got a Nobel Peace Prize. And then went about bombing. I mean, Barack Obama bombed a whole lot of folks, and he did a lot of deportation, too. So let's not get it twisted, as the saying goes. Once Dr. King was assassinated in 1968, his image was slowly transformed from an outside agitator into the most respected figure of the past 50 years. Even when Dr. King was alive, he was useful because his principal belief in nonviolent agitation in the face of Caucasian mobs and police violence allowed an alternative to more military agitators like Malcolm and later the Black Panther Party. His death, however, helped create a king frozen in time that could be publicly embraced by both political and corporate elites. The king we celebrate today is stuck in a glass case titled, I Have a Dream of King of 1963. The forgotten king of 67 and 68 is rarely spoken of in today's remembrance ceremonies. The king who talked more explicitly about war abroad, draining resources from home, and about the redistribution of wealth as the next phase of civil rights movement, and who began to embrace aspects of the, quote, power movement on redefining culture and power nowhere to be found. King, current moralization through corporate media eyes, plays out as a man without intellect or politics, whose sole purpose was integrating into an America that was on the road to inclusion through peaceful moral suasion. The depoliticizing of Dr. King from a man challenging systematic racism and unfair wealth accumulation to one only interested in racial harmony serves the interests of both economic and political elites. While King organizing and reach made him a threat not only to the hardline racist status quo, but also to economic elites within the United States who did not like the direction of his message. The wealthy didn't appreciate being challenged on their pay to workers, the economy built on welfare and the structural racism that keeps them in power. Shifting King's image to one that advocates for better race relationships is something that corporations and politicians that serve them can't support. These same entrenched interests oppose then and now Dr. King's views on increasing the minimum wage, higher taxes for the wealthy and corporations, and reductions in military spending to increase spending in the United States on policies that benefit the poor and working class. Once King was assassinated, co-opting his image became important as a check on the radicalization of both American African and Caucasian youth, who rejected some of King's tactics. Once King was assassinated, co-opting his image became important as a check on the radicalization of both American African and Caucasian youth who rejected some of King's tactics, pushing a barrier that, reluctantly or not, could support the most general of terms. The mainstream image makeover is near complete, with King's holiday now being used as a national day of service, a day to clean up the neighborhood, feed the homeless, and work across radical lines. In their hands, radical and economic justice and a fierce anti-militarism have lost their centrality to those who King was. If Dr. King was with us today, would not be running a soup kitchen. He would be continuing the challenge to American racism and hegemony. Dr. King would be rallying against the national security state. The revelations by whistleblowers Eric Snowden and the U.S. government spying on private citizens would surely bring back memories of FBI surveillance, infiltration, and attempting to neutralize the civil rights, New Left, and Black Power movements. Dr. King would be defending the young Snowden as a hero who himself is sacrificing a great deal to inform the public of U.S. tactics that violate both civil and human rights. Dr. King really would rally against the permanent state of war that we find ourselves in. The United States is still by far the leading arms seller in the world. Having shaken off its supposed Vietnam syndrome, is again ready to use its massive military might to make the world bend to its will. Preserving empire has always been expensive, and Dr. King, at his zenith, called the United States the greatest purveyor of violence in the world. I'll say that again. Dr. King called the United States the greatest purveyor of violence in the world. King's, whose final public break with Johnson administration was his stand against U.S. involvement in Vietnam, would no doubt have taken a similar stance against the war in Iraq, Afghanistan, and a not-so-secret drone warfare in Yemen, Syria, Somalia, Libya, Afghanistan, Iraq, Pakistan. Dr. King would point out the obvious hypocrisy of so many celebrities in celebrating his nonviolent stance while saying so little against U.S. violence abroad. Dr. King would have appreciated Barack Obama's ultimately black first in becoming the first president, but they would come out on opposite sides of Obama's safekeeping of the United States empire through drone and special operations warfare. As I said, Barack Obama dropped a whole lot of bombs on a whole lot of people, particularly in Africa, Yemen, Somalia. You know, sometimes we just don't know, do we? The success aspects of the civil rights movement in desegregating public accommodations and creating voter rights and creating new economic pathways would be encouraging to King, but it would be obvious that oppression is ongoing. The development of prison industrial complex, police brutality, the ongoing right-wing battle to diminish black and brown voting power, and the stagnation and loss of black wealth would push King further toward fighting for poor people. The tactics of middle-of-the-road Democrats, elected officials, black and white, who invoke him for their very actions would be embarrassing to King. He would be outraged by the corporate-aligned leaders of the civil rights movement who have participated in shifting black consciousness from collaborative tactics and strategies toward individual achievement, and you'll pull yourself up by your own bootstrap questions of poverty. Dr. King. Okay. Sometimes this computer would be acting up, y'all. Sorry. Okay, here we go. My computer's acting funny. Sorry, family. It was perfect a minute ago. Okay. And I think I only got a couple paragraphs to go. Dr. King would rally against the permanent state of war that we find ourselves in. The United States is still by far the leading arms seller in the world, and having shaken off the supposed Vietnam syndrome, is again ready to use its massive military might to make the world bend to its knees. Preserving empire has always been expensive, and Dr. King, at his zenith, is telling me I got some problems here. Dr. King at his zenith called the United States the greatest. I read that. Why are you doing this to me, family? I thank you for your patience, dear brothers and sisters. I surely do. I thank you for your patience. Well, let me do this, family. Let me do this. Okay. In 1968, Dr. King was mixing demands for racial justice with economic justice. He also was questioning the wisdom of integrating strategy, telling Harry Belafonte, I've come to believe we are integrating our people into a burning house. Fighting racial discrimination and breaking down overt legal barriers can mean only as so much without putting economic justice at the core of such work. Dr. King stated in a meeting with the SCLC, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, that something is wrong with capitalism as it now stands in the United States. We are not interested in being integrated into this value structure. A radical redistribution of power must take place. Do the new King alkaloids challenge the very roots of economic systems that has brought great wealth to a few while leaving others in the ditch? While King was beginning to challenge capitalism along with radical discrimination, his modern-day legacy has been hijacked and become false pagan idol that can be worshipped at the new memorial in D.C., built by state institutions and corporate elites that opposed him and his policies in his life. We have a caller. Good morning, caller 602. Good morning.
Yes, Brother Oshie. Good morning.
Good morning, Brother Marcus. How are you today?
I'm doing all right, brother. I'm doing all right. You know, you said something earlier. You were talking about the European and the violence. And I was listening to a video the other day by Dr. Amos Wilson. And he said, look, he said a person's history and the experience developed a person's psychology. And if you study the European history and the experience in Europe, it's all about violence. So, you know, I just say, you know, the Crusades, the what happened over there with them, you know, and what the Catholic Church did. It's all violence, and you know, so we can't expect them to be less than, you know, because they are a product of their history,
right,
and their experience as a people.
Right.
Yeah, violence. Now, you know, the biggest fight we're going to have, you know, is going to be in Africa also, you know, when we get to Africa to work with our people in Africa, because they in Africa, you know, they have a different mindset also regarding the European. I give you an example. I was born in Jamaica, and, you know, when white people come to Jamaica, they use hypocrisy on us. They smile and they laugh with us. So we feel, oh, these white folks are nice, you know. But when we come here to America, we get a shock of our life. We get a cultural shock. We realize, oh, these people here, they don't respond to us the way we respond to them. So the psychological makeup of us in the Caribbean and in Africa, it's different regarding white folks. You see, because the white folks don't really can come out and do what they want, playing, you know, so much, you know, probably with the exception of probably Namibia and South Africa, because they just came out of apartheid. But other parts of Africa and the Caribbean, you know, we don't see white folks as the enemy so much. It's because white folks work behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. They use our own people,
right,
to put down what they, you know. So we have a different psychology, you know,
right,
about white folks. You know, it's going to be the black people here in this part of the world, in America especially, because you are the most racially conscious black people in the world, because the white folks make sure they keep their foot on your neck here. So you have a clear picture of how white folks operate. But when they leave here, when when we leave here, it's a different mindset, you know. So we're going to have a big fight with our people to let them know that white folks are the enemy. You see, and, you know, because white folks, they use hypocrisy. They use our own people against us.
And then
they come bearing gifts. I come to help you. When they are the ones who putting it down.
That's right.
You see, but they come and they put their all they helping us, you know. So we got a big fight, but you know what? This is something we must do. We don't have a choice.
That's right. We don't have a choice. Either we do it or we die. Either we unite or we die. And that's the bottom line. Is there no other choice?
Exactly. There's no other choice. You know, and even for these integrationists who think they're going to integrate, when it becomes necessary for the white man to eliminate them, he's going to eliminate them too.
That's right.
See? So they better find their flock. Quick, fast, and in a hurry, because he used them, but when it come necessary for him to destroy them, he going to destroy them behind too. So they better get on board, you know?
That's right.
Anyway, brother, I'll continue.
All right, my brother.
And thank you so much for this, bro.
No, always, Brother Marcus. Appreciate you, dear brother. You have a blessed and wonderful day. Thank you for calling and contributing.
All right,
peace. Yeah, he's right. And you know Marcus comes with it. He know he's right. I think we all know that it's right in our hearts and in our minds. But fear, as Brother Kwaku said, false evidence proving to be real. Fear keeps us in this condition. We're going to take a break. When we come back from the break, you will be listening to more of what we need to hear and what we need to do. Stay right here with us. We're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back.
Hey, what's up now?
Brother, what's up?
This is a groovy party, man.
Yeah, brother,
dig it.
Stop right on.
There's too many of you to cry. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you die. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate.
You know we've got to find a way to bring some love in here today.
Picket lines and picket signs, don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see. Oh, what's going on?
What's going on?
What's going on?
What's going on?
Yeah, what's going on?
What's going on?
Oh, what's going on?
What's going on?
Oh, right now. Talk to me, so you can see. What's going on? Tell me what's going on. I'll tell you what's going on.
What's going on?
Ooh.
Right on.
what they used to be now. Where did all the blue skies go? Poison is the wind that blows from the north and south and east. Oh, mercy, mercy me. All things and what they used to be lost. Oil wasted on the oceans and upon our seas. Fish full of mercury. Oh, oh, mercy, mercy me. All things and what they used to be lost. Radiation underground and in the sky. Animals and birds who live nearby by the night. Oh, mercy, mercy, mercy. All things and what they used to be. What about this overcrowded land? How much more we use from man? Can't you stand?
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time. On Monday evening, it's Let's Buy Black 365, 8 p.m. until 10. Today, Wednesday, this evening, it's Revive with Sister POC, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Tomorrow, Thursday evening, it's Us Lifting Us, ULU, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People, 9 p.m. until 11. On Fridays, if it is Friday, and it is 8 p.m. Eastern Time, it is time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Saturdays, SST, Sports Talk. Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore, 10 a.m. to 12 noon, and then Black Reality Think Tank, 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. with Dr. William Rogers on Saturday. On Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., Revive with Sister POC, and Sunday evening, 7 p.m., Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. You know, they said that Donald Trump has great health. The doctor was on TV. Here's a man, 70 years old, constantly eating fast foods, chicken and hamburgers, admittedly, and is being viewed, and yet he has great health. He has good mental health, good physical health, little cholesterol, but I'm borderline, just that. Let me say this, brothers and sisters. In the elevation of my understanding and consciousness, in the belief of our ancestors and elders, I don't believe a damn word that this government ever puts out about anything and anybody. Particularly, this government puts out about its leader. All of it is a lie. In fact, they have to have Donald Trump. This is the... Because Caucasians were upset about what happened, even though the image of it was repulsive to them, and to us it was symbolism without substance. I'm talking about Barack Obama. It was symbolism without any substance. Our condition was no better. And yet, the Caucasians felt that even at that, that was so repulsive to them that they had to come up with Donald J. Trump. And even though he said crazy stuff, yet the lowest Caucasian man is better than any African man, no matter how intelligent that man is. That is the mindset. European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege must prevail at any cost. I don't know if you heard this Caucasian woman after Donald Trump at the meeting on immigration stated, why are we getting all of these people from these shithole countries coming in here? Well, here's a Caucasian woman that loved the idea. She loved the idea that Donald Trump had the courage to say it. Even though, now, there's been some pundits came on, said there was no words like that expressed in the White House ever. I doubt it. There has been some really adamant Woodrow Wilson, you name it, us. In fact, LBJ himself, I wouldn't be surprised if Kennedy. I have no faith in none of these Caucasians at all. But here's this Caucasian lady, and understand this. She represents the mindset, the general mindset. You don't want to believe it. I know you don't, because you hope and pray. But if it wasn't like that, it would have changed. And there is no change. It's going to get worse. Let me see if I can. This Caucasian lady was adamant.
Tell me how many, we've all said it, we've all thought it, we was, you know, you say it among your family, your friends, and he just freaking comes right out and says it. I love this man. He is freaking awesome. He is great. And he's right. Why are they all coming here? They're not assimilating into our country. Why are they coming here? Stay in your little shithole countries. Stay there. We don't want you here. What are you bringing to this country? Nothing. Absolutely nothing you bring into this country. I love it. I just have to laugh. I'm sorry, guys. He is the freaking bomb. He is the best. Love this man. Because look, he's saying what we all think, what we all say, and so on and so forth. It's just awesome. It's so refreshing to have a president like this. Just say what you got to say. What do you got to lose? Just say what you got to say. Because let me tell you, more than half of this country is all thinking the exact same thing. Stay where you are. Why? Why come here? You don't assimilate to this country. You're not bringing anything. You're not. It's just. I love him. I freaking love him. And all the Democrats are up in arms. Everybody's going crazy. He said that. Oh, well, then that kind of suck. Truth hurts, doesn't it? All right, peeps. That's all I got right now. Because I love it. I just freaking love it. Peace out, peeps. And talk to you guys soon. Bye.
And so for some of us, we believe that what she was about and what she said was an aberration. You know? That's just a small group of racist, bigoted Caucasians. No, brothers and sisters. That is the general mindset of Caucasians. Because if they weren't like that, it wouldn't happen. I've just mentioned many times before that if only Caucasians would have voted, Barack Obama wouldn't have been president both times. If only Caucasians would have voted in Alabama, Jones wouldn't have been the senator. Roy Moore would have been a senator. Understand the dynamics. Op-ed column
the lowest Caucasian man. This is out of the op-ed columns of the New York Times, written by Charles Blow, dated a few days ago. This was before he made the comments that he made. I guess Donald Trump was eager to counter the impression in Michael Wolff's book that he is irascible, mentally small, and possibly insane. On Tuesday, he allowed a bipartisan session in the White House about immigration to be televised for nearly an hour. Surely, he thought that he would be able to demonstrate to the world his lucidity and acumen, his grasp of the issues and his relish for rapprochement with his political adversaries. But instead, what came through was an image of a man who had absolutely no idea what he was talking about, a man who says that there are 180 degrees from the things he said before, a man who has no clear line of reasoning, a man who is clearly out of his depth and willing to do and say anything to please the people in front of him. He demonstrated once again that he is a man without principle, interested only in how good he can make himself look and how much money he makes. Yes, he has the intrinsic hostility to people who are not Caucasian, particularly when they challenge him. But a matter of policy, the whole idea of building a wall which Mexico would pay was just a cheap campaign stunt. Once again, please the people in front of him. Trump is not committed to the wall on principle. He's committed only to the looking good as a result of whatever comes of it. Mexico is never going to pay for it. And he knew it. He has always known it. This was just another lie. Someone must have struck the phrase chain immigration and diversity lottery into his brain. Easy buzzwords, you see. And he can now rail against those ideas for applause lines. But he is completely malleable on actual immigration policies. He doesn't have the stamina for that much reading. Learning about immigration would require reading more words that would fit on a television teleprompter. If Trump follows through with what he said during that meeting, his base would once again be betrayed. He would have proven once again that he was saying something or anything to keep them angry, even telling lies. He would have demonstrated once again his incompetence and unfitness. And once again, they won't care. They don't care. That's because Trump is a man has message. Trump is a man has Messiah. Trump support isn't philosophical, but theological. Trumpism is a religion founded on patriarchy and European, Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege. The embodiment of that. It is the belief that even the least qualified is a better choice than the most qualified woman, and a belief that the most vile, anti-intellectual, scandal-plagued simpleton of a Caucasian man is sufficient to follow in the presidential footsteps of the best educated, most eloquent, most affordable American African man. As Lyndon Johnson said in the 1960s to young Bill Moyers, if you can convince the lowest Caucasian man he's better than the best colored man, if you can convince the lowest white man that he's better than the best colored man, he won't notice you're picking his pocket. Hell, give him somebody to look down on and he'll empty his pockets for you. Trump supporters are saying to this country, screaming to this country, that although he may be the lowest Caucasian man, he is still better than Barack Obama, the best colored man. In a way, Trump represents Caucasian people's right to be wrong and still to be right. He is the embodiment of the unassailability of Caucasian power and Caucasian privilege. To abandon him is to give up the fact and the pact that America was made with its Caucasian citizens from the very beginning.
The government will help to underwrite Caucasian safety and success, even at the expense of other people in this country, whether they be indigenous people, American African, or any new immigrant. I'll repeat, to abandon Trump is to give up on the pact that America has made with its Caucasian citizens from the very beginning. The government will help underwrite Caucasian safety and success, even at the expense of other people in this country, whether they be indigenous people or Native Americans, American Africans, or any new immigrants. But this idea of elevating the lowest Caucasian man over the most qualified or deserving didn't begin with Johnson's articulation and won't end with Trump's manifestation. This is woven into the fabric of this country. It is the flag. It's woven into that flag. When you see that flag, brothers and sisters, if you are a conscious individual, that is a flag that is just as bad as the Confederate flag. That's right. When you see that flag, no, I know there's some of us who want us to look at that flag with reverence and all the wars we fought in and all the things that we have done, and that's just as much flag as theirs as it is ours. Stop it. That flag represents and has it done and has and what it has done, particularly in the last number of years, it represents European, Caucasian supremacy, racism. Excuse me, European, Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege to be imposed upon the world. To be imposed upon the world. As I've written here before, when Alabama called a constitutional convention in 1901, Emmett O'Neill, who later became the governor, argued that the state should lay down and strong and permanent in the fundamental law of the state, the foundation of European Caucasian extremism forever in Alabama. And as part of that strategy, he argued, I don't believe it is good policy to go up in the hills and tell them that Booker T. Washington or the council or anybody else is allowed to vote because they are educated. The minute you do that, every white person who is not educated is disenfranchised on the same position. In his essay, Black Reconstruction in America, 1860 to 1880, William Edward Burkhard Du Bois, W.E. Du Bois, discussed why poor Caucasians didn't make common cause with poor American Africans and those who were in captive, but instead prized their roles as overseers and captive catchers, eagerly joining the Klan. This fed the Caucasian man's vanity because it associated him with the so-called masters, Du Bois wrote. He continued, slavery bred into the poor whites a dislike of Negro toil of all sorts. He never regarded himself as a laborer or as a part of any labor movement. If he had any ambition at all, it was to become a planter and to own Negroes. To these Negroes, he transferred all the dislike and hatred which he had for the whole system. The result was that the system was held stable and intact by poor white folk. For European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege to be made perfect, the lowest Caucasian man must be exalted above those who are African. No matter how much of an embarrassment and a failure Trump proves to be, and boy is he, his exploits must be judged as a success. He must be deemed a correction to Barack Obama and superior to Hillary Clinton. European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege demands it. Patriarchal, hardcore patriarchal, demands it. Trump supporters demand it. New York Times editorial. I tell you, you know, when we begin to understand what has happened, what continues to happen, and yet we have leadership that continues to hold out hope. We have people on radio every day, television every day, who are telling our people to vote, to change things, who are telling our people that we're going to march, that we're going to demonstrate until the people who are in power are going to somehow correct their behavior and their mindset. We are telling our people that we got to keep hope alive. We're telling our people that we can pray and influence a people who established this to respect our humanity, to treat us with with dignity and respect, and allow us to become equal partners in this madness. I'm going to tell you, if I was an evil person and I want to maintain and sustain the privilege that I created for myself, I would want to create into a people who are constantly begging and challenging me, while all along me knowing that they will never, ever achieve into my system what I have created for myself. This is mine, not theirs, but I want to hold it out to them, because by doing such, they won't do nothing for themselves. They'll want what I have. They'll beg, they'll plead, they'll march, they'll demonstrate, they'll put forth laws, they'll vote on it. But yet, the conditions stay the same. The status quo is maintained. Brothers and sisters, we are at a tenuous position in our situation here in this country. We say it all the time, but yet we don't, you know, we don't want to believe it. We kind of refuse to believe it. We want to hold out hope that somehow that the Caucasian will get an epiphany and realize what he has done has been a disservice to humanity. And now what he wants to do is make it right. Please. It hasn't happened. It's not happening, and it ain't going to happen. Our problem is that we pray that it happens. We hope that it happens. We wish that it happens. Because the work that is necessary for us to do, our people think it is too involved, it's too hard. Changing our minds, instead of begging and pleading, changing our minds to the acceptance of who we are historically, who we are culturally, and beginning to work in that framework, believing in ourselves, believing in each other, working, striving to help one another. See, we don't want to deal with that. We don't want to deal with the whole concept of being collective. There is no way in hell that an organization like Us Lifting Us and the rightful, good, dignified individuals who are involved, I'm not saying it because I am, but I'm just saying that I know these people. We are trying to do something righteously for our people, but yet we don't even have a fraction of involvement. In fact, we are putting up this cafe, and in our hopes that the members will begin to take out the $1,000 shares as opposed to just a $50 a year membership fee. Because that's when the real work will begin. When our members say, I'm going to make that kind of commitment. But we've been trained not to do that. We've been trained to go against any concept of unity amongst our people, of working together. We've been trained to believe that we're Americans and America's espouse individualism, materialism, greed, and violence. We're individuals. We don't care about what happens to, because, I mean, you know, if somebody's poor, that's probably their fault. If they're miseducated, uneducated, that's probably their fault. A lot of things that happen, of course, are by circumstance. Sometimes you are born in a situation not to your making, not to your choosing. You were born into it. And you were born into a situation that probably afforded you privilege and all the things in the world. Or you probably was born into a situation that was impoverished, chaotic. And how you were born is just that fate. Truly, some people have risen above that. Some people were born into those privileged positions, recognize the hypocrisy, recognize the fact that what they have been born into has caused destruction on the planet and to various people, and may speak against it. You were born in a situation where you are impoverished. The whole atmosphere is chaotic, truly unstable, but yet in you and in your mind, you overcame it. You seek knowledge. You learn. You rose above it. Unfortunately, many, many of those who did that, they succumbed to being lovers of this system. The whole idea, see, I was in a bad situation. I rose above. I pulled myself up by my own bootstraps. And look at me today. I have a great job. I went to school. I went to the right schools. I found scholarship money. I did this and that and the other. I did it myself. I did it on my own. And today I have a great job. I live in the suburbs. I'm the only one on my block. My two kids go, they're the only ones in their school. We're doing great. America, I love it. I love the idea that me, have overcome all of these to do great things. I love it. And that's what America breeds into us, that individualism, that whole idea that I can do it myself. I did it on my own. I don't need nobody. I surely don't need us. And then you begin to develop a disdain and a disgust for African people. Remember, I was talking about the new black. This kind of system breeds into us a self-hatred and a denial of self that is perplexing, because some of us want to be black. We don't want to be African. We want to be black. We don't want to be white, but essence in wanting to be black, we want to be white. Follow me. Because there is no such thing as being white or being black. There's no such thing as race. All of this was constructed by Caucasians, by Europeans. The whole idea of race, there can be even traced to Johann Blumenbach or Carol Linnaeus in the 1600s. Race, the idea that human stratification of Caucasoid, Negroid, Mongoloid. But of course, Caucasians with the top position. The top position on the evolutionary scale or the creation scale. Because, I mean, if I develop a religion and my religion is a creator of all things, well, surely the best of his creation of in terms of human beings has to be me. Race. There's no such thing as race. There's only the human race of which African people are fathers and mothers of. And even for Caucasian scientists to understand that the human race had a beginning in Central East Africa and migrates from that point, and what makes us different as human beings is the ability to adapt to environments that we find ourselves in or being subjugated to. Because either you adapt or you die. The adaptation for Europeans came into Neanderthal. Because when Africans came into Europe, see, Neanderthal is not a creation in itself. It's an evolutionary process. When you're cut off by an ice age, the Pleistocene ice age of 12,000 years ago, you change, you mutate. You mutate. And that mutation is the survivability of that species at that moment, in that time. It takes thousands of years. But that's what happened. No, Caucasians are not. Their evolutionary development is not superior in no form, shape, or fashion. But their mindset is. But what in that development made them? In Michael Bradley's book, The Iceman's Inheritance, European sexist, racist, and greedy nature, what he's saying is that that environment that the Caucasian developed in was so harsh and so unforgiving. That's what made him the warlike creature that he is. That's what made him the sexist. And to develop a culture of death, a culture of rape. With all this thing happening with Me Too and outing out all these people, understand that European culture is a rape culture. European culture, which we are subjugated in and victims of, and not just us here who live here in America, but because of colonization and the imposition of culture around the world, because it is culture. It is not race. There's no such thing as race. It is the Europeans' culture that is imposed upon us and others. It is so predominant that the idea in the world, in business and so forth, is European. The language, the dress, the dictates of how things are happening. Well, it's European. That's why the UN is a farce. That's why anything else that is controlled by Europeans is bull. Because the whole idea that they have in their mind, it must be dominated and controlled by us. Now, I don't believe everything that Dr. Francis Cress Welsing said. Not everything, but a hell of a lot of it. That's for sure. Her book, The ISIS Papers, dealing with symbolism, a lot of people couldn't grasp that, couldn't understand that. Her Crest theory on color confrontation and the fact that racism, European, Caucasian, extremism, racism, and privilege is in everything they do. Everything. All areas of people, activity, entertainment. Look at the history. Look at the history on everything that I'm saying here. And that brought her to the conclusion. Because it's in everything they do, war, sex, politics, education, everything. And when they came out of that dark age, that medieval age, land poor, resource poor, people poor, and began to go around the world and take everybody's stuff in the name of and rape the females that they encountered, rape them, and then looking at the offspring, not looking like them, causing to have within them a fear of genetic annihilation. And so therefore, we're going to promote this idea of whiteness. And we're going to come together against everybody who's outside of us. And we're going to control them. Either we control them or we eliminate them. Controlling them is controlling what they think, controlling their minds. One of them is to make them believe that they shouldn't want to be like us. To make them believe that we are superior. That we are the model. We are the idea. Impose upon them a religion that's tied to us. Even when we do that, they may change imagery, but the reality is that that image is there. I don't give a damn how dark you make it. I don't give a damn you put dreads on it. That image is there, and it speaks to us. Not only that, we wanted to make that image historical. We wanted to make that image factual. That's why I rail against Christianity so much, brothers and sisters. I'm saying, where is the historical information? Where is the facts? You can go to ancient Kemet and see who we're talking about that had lived 4, 5, 6,000 years ago. You say that Christianity is only 2,000 years old. Well, where is the information historically up to prove that the disciples, Jesus, all the other things that you say are contained in the Bible that is supposed to be historic? The whole idea of European Caucasian supremacy, I got to continue to get it right because I love what Brother Paul said. They are not supreme. I remember a sister. She was so adamant about not saying that they are supreme, that they are superior. Because in essence, they are not. That's why I agree with that. They are not. And that has been proven consistently, constantly. That's documented that they are not. But yet, they prevail in that notion of them being superior. Why? How does it happen? That's why I'm saying that with the supporters of Donald Trump, their belief is that they are. And that they are so adamant about it that the least qualified Caucasian is better than any African that you put up. The least, the lowest man, as Johnson's Southern strategy put it, to make you feel and know that you are better than any black man. And that's why we want to be black. We don't want to be African. We want to be black. And knowing that being black is still lower than to be Caucasian. But we want to be black because being black is in support of being Caucasian. Because we want what they have. We like their cars. We like their homes, their schools. We like their corporations, their businesses. We don't want to challenge them. We don't want to compete with them. No, we want to be in them.
We want to give our expertise to them and so the Caucasian can get credit. When the Caucasian lady, and I hope you heard it, I got it off another computer, but I'm quite sure you probably seen the Caucasian lady. If you don't, go on to AtlantaBlackStar.com, Atlanta Black Star. You know, I'm always pushing and promoting AtlantaBlackStar.com for its excellence in political narrative and video streams. And you can hear this Caucasian, but I'm quite sure you heard it on Facebook or somebody sent you an email or whatever. You know, how this, but understand this woman. She's the general Caucasian woman who is in support of the Caucasian man. No, this woman, and like most of all the other women, would not have supported Hillary Clinton. Although you know how I feel about the Clintons. I can't stand them there. But would not have supported the Clintons. You know, they wouldn't have done that. Because the reality is that Caucasian women in general support Caucasian men. Now, you see all the backlash from the Me Too who are coming out saying that this person, that person in forms of government, in entertainment or whatever, molested them, harassed them, or whatever they've done. And some have given up their positions. Some have given up their positions in response to that. I'm going to say this. This movement is not going to bring any fundamental change in terms of what's happening for African people. Sisters will still be harassed, raped, sexually molested, you name it. It's not going to bring any fundamental change to a people whose history and whose mindset has always been about aggression, control. Because if their mindset, if I can't control it, I can't have it, I'll destroy it. Brothers and sisters, we are got about 10 minutes left. I always appreciate the opportunity to come to you every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for these couple of hours to try to put something on our minds, to try to get us to think outside of the imposed boundaries that European culture has placed upon us to make us feel ashamed of who we are and to make us feel that we must be like them in order for us to be civilized. We must be like them for us to have a valued culture. We must be like them. And it's the worst thing that we could do, is to be like them. And we don't want to see them for who they truly are. We don't want to do what we need to do. We got a caller. We'll take this caller. We got a couple minutes left. 646, you're on.
Yeah, Ochi, it's Brother Jay. I just wanted to listen to the end of the show, bro.
Okay. You got it, my brother. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. No, thank you. You know, the bottom line is that if we don't come together and embrace who we are historically, who we are culturally, and the key word is culture. In fact, I'll be saying this for the remainders of my our programs here as I broadcast, and that is this: the best way to fight an alien
an oppressive culture is to embrace your own. We cannot fight these crackers militarily. That would be suicidal. I've stated that they've always created the best way. They always created the best way to kill. They have the armament. They're only 10% of the population, but they intimidate and impose themselves on the vast majority of the planet, with the exception of a few who are adamant that they ain't going to take it. The Chinese. I ain't mentioned the Russians, because the Russians is Caucasian. Although ideologically they may be opposed to some degree, but I bet you when that push comes to shove. But the Chinese, the Koreans, those who are deemed outside of the Caucasian, they want to make sure that they control. So the best way for us to fight that, to fight this system, this oppressive system, is to embrace our own culture. Not the culture that we have here in America, brothers and sisters. This is not our culture. In fact, our culture has been so fragmented that we need to create a culture of Africa for Africans. We need to create a culture of Africa for Africans. That culture is based on respect. That culture is based on family. That culture follows the Nguza Saba of unity, self-determination, collective working responsibility, cooperative economics, purpose, creativity, and faith. That culture follows the Maadian principles of truth, justice, righteousness, harmony, reciprocity, order, balance. That culture embraces the idea that other cultures would emulate and embrace as well, because it does the best for the most. It does the best for the most. And it helps even those who fall into the cracks. That culture is an African culture. I ain't talking about tribalism. I ain't talking about mysticism. I'm not even talking about religion. I'm talking about an African spirituality. I'm talking about embracing African culture that is authentic to the best practices and principles that we can develop. It comes to a point, dear brothers and sisters, either we embrace it or we die. There is no other choice. There is no other choice. This is a battle of cultures. Europeans impose their culture on other people. It's not about race. There's no such thing as race. It is about culture. And in European culture, we develop an alienation of culture, or a substitute culture, because we're ostracized and alienated from the dominant culture. It is a subculture. And in that subculture, there's a lot of hatred within it for each other. There's an idea that in that culture, it is about me and mine, and to hell with you and yours. Look at the communities we come from. Look at the communities we're living in. Look at our situation here. Look at our situation globally. That's what I'm saying, dear brothers and sisters. We must develop and embrace the idea of African culture. Not just from one sector of Africa, but a new dynamic, Pan-Africanism. Embracing African culture, the best of it. We can take from whatever we have experienced in America, in the Caribbean, in the diaspora, even on the continent. We can take what has worked from ancient time to present. We can take what has worked for us in a good sense through colonialism, through enslavement. We can take
what has been best since the end of colonialism and now neocolonialism, to eradicate all of that. We could take what is best to make sure that we're now a self-determining, independent, sovereign people. That we rely on one another. Nobody outside of us dictates to us about any damn thing. Nothing. And everything that we have, it is ours. And it is for the benefit of for us as a people. You want something? Here is the fair market value for it. All land is controlled by us. Education is controlled by us. Industry is controlled by us. We're not looking outside of ourselves for anything. Believe it or not, brothers and sisters, even at this very moment, we have what we need. We have what we need. But we've been trained to believe that we can't do it. The best way to fight an alien and oppressive culture is to embrace your own, to develop your own culture that speaks to the best in humanity, that speaks to the best of us as African people, to love one another, trust one another, respect one another. I'll be pushing and promoting this to the day I die. To the day that I expire. I'll push it, promote it, because I believe it. I believe in it. And I believe it is the only salvation for African people. Brothers and sisters, coming to a close, and I appreciate the opportunity once again. Talking about the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King and who he truly was towards the end of his life as opposed to what he was trying to do. And I think his intentions were obviously good, but the naivety of the whole situation and the belief that the people who we're dealing with are human like us and have the same feelings as we do. We now know, no, that's not the case. Also, too, explaining why Trump is where he has to be and why many people agree with all the things that he says and he does. Helps us understand and gets rid of the illusion of inclusion. We will never, ever truly be a part of this madness, and I hope that we don't. And I would hope and wish that our people stop selling it to us and imposing it upon us, our own people, but because they don't know no better either. Brothers and sisters, Stephen Biko said, the most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor, the European, the Caucasian, the oppressor, is the mind of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. Be back with us on Friday. Hope you have a blessed and wonderful day. Be back with us on Friday. Shem Hotep, go in peace. Asante Sana, thank you. Peace, family.